The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us for the third round. How are you, brother?
Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to be here.
What have you been working on? You said your new TV show, round two.
Yeah, so I'm making the second season of Wild Fed right now for Outdoor Channel. So I just got back from the field. I've been out harvesting choke cherries all day, which are a prunus species. So same genus as peaches and plums and nectarines and apricots, but a wild variety of cherry. So one of my favorite fruits. I'm deep in the production for season two.
Tell us about season one and how that was received, because you sent me the links and I absolutely loved watching it. I guess the hunger, pardon the pun, for this type of information is more pertinent now than I think than in the last few decades, for sure. So tell us about the reaction or the response or the feedback or the celebratory nature of your viewers.
Well, I think there's, first I'll say the show is called Wild Fed, and it's about hunting, fishing, foraging, and then making wild food meals, usually with chefs, sometimes with me. But it's a kind of a culinary adventure meets an outdoor show. And, I originally produced it myself for the web and released it to our audience, and that went really well. It was really well received. Then kind of COVID kicks and, there's just like no TV available because, the networks had, at that time, really strict protocols. Testing was still new at the time and whatever, all the vaccine stuff. So it was costing them a fortune to send crews who they needed to film with out to hotels, quarantine them for a week. Then they couldn't see anybody but each other for a week, while they'd film. Then they'd have to go another week of quarantine in a hotel. Then they could go back. Well, this was costing so much, the networks kind of ran out of TV. And a production company came to us, said, "Let us pitch your show." And we said, "Let's do it." And they pitched it and we got picked up with the Outdoor Channel. And it went really well because they came back and said they wanted another season. So we're working on 10 fresh episodes right now.
It's so interesting because I started my journey in the television world about just over 20 years ago, two decades. And I was very, very shy. I was a very shy chef. I felt very comfortable in the four walls of my kitchen, running a team of chefs. And I was really good at that. I'm happy to give myself a pat on the back because I put in the hours and the hard work. But then when I was invited to be a
TV chef, I couldn't think of anything worse because I went into fear. I went into panic. Yeah. I went into dread. I went into the whole notion of all of my greatest fears had materialized in that one offer for me.
Yeah.
Do you want to be seen? Do you want to be heard? Do you have anything to offer?
Mm-hmm.
All of these, you know, for somebody listening out there, they might think that's crazy that anybody could be scared of actually presenting themselves to an audience. But for me, it was.
I think a lot of people would understand that, you know, it seems like a common fear.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
And it took me 6 years to break that fear to a place of neutrality. And then it was interesting because right at the point in time that I felt good about it, the show that I was on finished and my brother-in-law at the time and myself pitched a show which was fishing and cooking around Australia, you know, catching our own food and cooking it. And when we did that show, the way that I presented as a host completely changed because I was doing something that I loved and I felt I can offer something here. Catching my own fish or foraging for our own seafood and then cooking it with a good mate, it just flowed. It didn't feel like work. Let's put it that way. So tell me about your transition from the start. Did you have any fears in being seen or had you worked that stuff out earlier on in your life? Or tell us about your greatest fears.
I'm really comfortable on a camera and I'm really comfortable on a stage. And I just always have been. So from the very first opportunity I got to public speak, it was like, it immediately was like, oh, this is my thing. I can do this. I'm very comfortable. Where I'm challenged is outside of it when I get noticed by people. That part's hard. So in the last, it's happening more now for me now that I'm on television because I would experience it, you know, being an influencer in the health world or in the nutrition world, I would experience it sometimes at Whole Foods or, you know, like a health food store or something. Somebody would be like, oh my gosh, I've been following you forever. But it didn't happen to me in public all that often sometimes, but lately it's been happening more. So, and it's not just me, it's like my vehicles too, because they're in the show, part of the set design, if you will. So, you know, last week I went on a canoe trip with my wife and I come back to pick up the truck later on that day. And there's a note on it like, hey, Dan, keep up the great work, you know, we went camping this weekend. We went away for 3 days to camp on an island off the coast here in Maine just to get away. And three times on that island, you know, it happens. And that's hard for me because I'm really reclusive. And I present a pretty good mood when I do interviews like this because this is so fun for me. This is like my thing. I love to share and communicate and teach. But then when I'm not doing that, I don't really want to be suddenly thrust into that, having to put on the show, the dog and pony show or whatever. So that's for me, that's the fear is like getting noticed outside of it. I have so much compassion for major stars who, you know, I mean, who am I? Like, I'm on the Outdoor Channel. It's like not a big deal, you know, but I'm experiencing already a little of it. So I can imagine for people who are extremely high profile, how difficult it is to go get a smoothie or go fill up your gas tank or what, to just be a normal person. It's got to be challenging. So anyway, for me, I have much bigger fear of having to suddenly be thrust into like putting on the mask in public. You know, all the expectations that are on you for the thing, because I think, and you know, I'm sure you experience this when you present out to the world, you present a pie slice of who you are. You don't present your whole life. You know, you don't present all of the intricacies of your life. It's like, I present hunting, fishing, foraging, wild food content. I have a lot broader of a life, but I think I'm going to spare the world the rest of it. You know? So when, you know, when somebody catches you and you're not in that mode, I find that awkward, man.
What do you think about that? I mean, you must think about the masks that we wear and the hats, so to speak, that as a father, as a husband, as a presenter, as the foraging expert or the nutritionist, as the son, as the whoever you are. And with the experience that you've had, throughout your life, do you ever think you get to a point where there won't be interchangeable masks for the situations you're in, or do you think that's just a part of who we are?
I think it's a part of who we are. Yeah, I think, well, it's in combination with our society and the way it's run. But I understand what you're saying, like, because there's a sort of, ideally, we would be fully integrated. That's kind of what you're alluding to, I think, where it's like, man, if I could be all those people all the time so that whenever anybody notices you or whatever, you're just the same person. But that's not fully reality, right? It's like, if I, let's say that I just had a big explosion at work, something crazy happens in the company, and I sit down to this interview, I'm not bringing that baggage to this interview. You don't want me to sit down here all upset and stressed and depressed. So what happens is you step on camera, bam, you shift into that part that you have learned how to play that is real and authentic, but only represents a part of you, right? So if you just had an issue with your kids or your wife or something like that, and all of a sudden you sit down here, I'm expecting you to set that aside for the greater good. And so I do think that there are some aspects of that that are important, but I think we have to be careful of being too much the politician as well. I mean, that's the flip side. So to me, everything is like, it's all trade-offs, right? It's like, I think that can be healthy to a point, and then it gets really unhealthy. Boy, sometimes you see like politicians when they don't realize they're on a hot mic, you know, and you're like, oh, you're a completely different person. So that's gone too far, I think. So, you know, finding the right balance. But I mean, the Daniel Vitalis that has to, you know, sit down and go through my IRS paperwork when I pay my taxes, you don't want to interview with that guy. He's no fun to talk to.
Podcast 4.
Yeah, while I do my taxes.
So last interview that we had, or the last conversation we had, was hugely profound, and a lot of people got so much out of it, including myself.
Oh, cool.
And cool, I think we're a year or so down the track from last time when we were talking about the pandemic and where we were then. And fast forward to now, and the amount of people that have asked me for more information on how to basically live outside of the system and to be as reliant on themselves as possible is becoming more and more pertinent, I believe, and also there's greater awareness around this. We're seeing a lot of people leaving the cities, looking for land, looking for communities, looking for something where they can take ownership of as much of their life as possible. So I'm very hopeful and I'm very grateful for the last year and a half, because it is nearly forcing people to focus on what is most important for them. And one of the things I've been saying to, and you might get this as well, but I get emails every day of people in despair, people that lost their job, lost their business, got mouths to feed, don't know what to do. They're in lockdown. They're being threatened with vaccines. They're being threatened with whatever. And it's very challenging for me to open the emails every day and see this, or messages from people. I don't know these people generally. But they're reaching out to me because they think I might have the answers, which is wonderful, but it's very like, and I'm very honest with them. And I say, I don't have the solution for you. I don't have the answer, but what I would be focusing on is the things that you can control. And it might sound crazy, and it's not what probably people want to hear, but I say, focus on the essentials of life. Food, water, shelter, and love and connection. And be prepared.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing, because part of me feels like we're just at the beginning of this fuckery, if I can call it that.
I would agree with that.
And others believe that it's going to all go back to normal in the space of weeks or months.
It never was normal. This is such a brief moment that we experienced, this thing we're calling normal, we're so, I'm interrupting you and I apologize, but I just want to say we're so blessed to have experienced that last couple decades, because we're the only humans in history who lived through that kind of a peace. And it's never existed before. That's not the way the world has ever been. It's just never been this way. There's never been this level of peace and safety and prosperity for human beings anytime in history, in any place in history. There's never been the level of freedom that we experienced. And I hope this isn't true, but it's possible it's never going to be experienced again. We might have, you know, it might be the only time it's ever happened. You know, people like to get real new agey and be like, yeah, but what about like ancient Egypt? It's like, yeah, I mean, if you are a pharaoh or the family, but everybody else were serfs, man. It's not like there's never been what we just experienced. And so people are like, oh, I want to get back to normal. It's like, man, we're not going back to that. I kind of wish we could. But then we all know that, again, if something's not sustainable, then you can't keep doing it because it's not sustainable. So our lifestyle that we've been living can't be sustained, not with this many of us, you know, not with the resources on the planet being in the state that they're in. So I say that as somebody who hunts, fishes, and forages, who gets to get eyes on the resources really regularly, get a sense of what is still out there. So things have to change, and there's enormous pieces on the board being moved into positions. And now would be, I think it's a good time for people to focus on some of those things you just mentioned. I do. I think there's a lot of different layers and levels and octaves of it, because if you were, you know, if you're just out of school and, you know, you're 18, you're 20, you know, you've got your first job, it's like you don't have a home, a family, like what it looks like for you to kind of get your, all your stuff in order is different than somebody who's 55 and has a great career and has all this accumulated wealth, and you know, how they're going to position themselves is different. So there's no like one size solution for everybody, but I think everybody needs to remember those core things that you just mentioned, those like survival core basics, because, there's not going to, I don't expect that the folks who'll be looking out for those things for you are, I don't think that they're going to be providing exactly what you want in the future world, you know?
Had you had a feeling that this might come along?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on. I think a lot of us, right? Like knew this. And here's something that I find frustrating in myself and a little bit in other people, but mostly I find it frustrating in myself. I have a pretty good sense of what the outcomes are that are being sought are. But I notice that we'll get caught up in the individual movements and we'll be like, oh my God, look what they're doing over here. Isn't that crazy? Why would that doesn't make any sense? Why would they say this? It doesn't make any sense. And if you zoom out and you look at the big picture of what the goals are, it all makes sense. It all makes perfect sense. You know, so the individual chess moves might not make sense if you analyze them in isolation. But when you zoom out, you're like, oh, I see what's going on here. And this is how I would probably do it too if those were my goals. You know, it's easy to analyze it when you get the big picture. So I think a lot of us knew what the big picture was. And now we're just watching all the pieces move.
Do you, if you're comfortable, because I know you'll be able to surmise this or explain what the agenda, what the outcome of the agenda may be or is, and I'm not saying it's going to definitely happen, but a lot of people, I'll give you an example. I was with a dear friend the other day, and they understand, like, why does everybody need to have this put into their arm? Like they've worked that out going, that doesn't make sense. But the next part that they couldn't fathom was how could so many governments and politicians be in on it? And they had a really hard time to see that there could be global corruption. I'm not the best at explaining this, but I know you might have a much more poetic and easily understandable definition or narrative for people to sort of see where this may be going or potentially is going. And then we'll talk about the solutions or what individuals or families or communities can do for themselves.
I had somebody I was talking to last year who I had really different views on things. You know, we were having one of those civil but heated kind of conversations. And that person told me, you know, you're addicted to freedom. That's your problem, you know? And I thought like, oh, that's an interesting way of saying it. I was like, you're right. I am proudly actually addicted to freedom. I was thinking, you know, hey, every wild animal I've ever seen is pretty addicted to freedom too. Go try to take it away from them and watch what happens, you know? And interestingly, when you look at the big picture of human history, as it's been at least recorded and you know, we have to rely on a lot of anthropology and archaeology to deduce a lot of this. And unfortunately, that stuff's been really tainted by you know, kind of colonial ideas and such. But essentially what we understand about people prior to the agricultural revolution, you know, hunter-gatherer people, is that there was this very strong notion of individual sovereignty. So every person was a sovereign, but every person was highly dependent on their community, on their tribe. So there was like a shared survival skin in the game for everybody. So if you didn't like the decisions that were being made, you had every right to just walk away and no one could make you do anything. But then as we shift into the agricultural revolution and we go into the formation of city states, and with that comes a classism. And over the last 10, 12,000 years, we got into this situation where very few people had any sovereignty at all. Everybody's like a cog in the greater machine. Then comes along the United States and a couple other nations who try these radical self-sovereignty experiments. And human beings once again get individual sovereignty at some level. And there's a couple things going on. I think to folks in power, that can be very threatening. But secondarily, this is not the world where we had sovereignty before with endless resources and very few people. Now we're in a world where if everybody has individual sovereignty, everybody gets to make disjointed decisions that have huge impacts and ripple effects, not just on the current living population, but on future populations. So there's a massive reckoning that's happening. And some of it has to happen no matter what. And some of it, I think, has a kind of a darker, there's a dark agenda woven through it too. But we see big players. We see tech oligarchs. We see billionaires. We see unelected officials of world governance, all kind of coalescing right now around a couple of core tenant ideas to reshape the world according to this vision that they have. And you don't need me to explain it because they just tell you what it is. They tell you straight up what it is. It's sort of like the World Economic Forum's thing, you know, their great reset they keep talking about. And you watch the language of that roll out of the lips of world leaders in every country. And, you know, they have this idea like you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? It's like a return to serfdom. The idea that everything belongs to the government and you kind of rent it, you know, like, medieval Europe would have been, unless you were again in the elite upper crust of it. So I think that there are folks who would like to have that kind of power. And then there are folks who also understand like, hey, we will destroy the entire ecosystem. It's this very complicated. I don't know. I don't pretend to have an answer here. It's like, I don't like being forced into any of these things, but I also understand that I understand how difficult it must be to make decisions when you have that much power, because you see like, hey, what do we do about the oceans? What do we do about the rivers? What do we do about, you know, the remaining arable land? What do we do about the population crisis? Like all these things, there are people who wake up in the morning and that's what's on their agenda to address. Like I'm lucky. I wake up in the morning. That's not on my agenda. I don't have to deal with those kind of questions, you know? So I think that a lot of these things are moving right now, and we're in a time of tremendous change. And I don't think that there's one agenda. I think there's a lot of competing ones all playing out, and you can see the wars are happening right in front of our eyes, right? I mean, it's amazing watching, at least here in the United States. I don't follow the politics out there so much, but you know, I catch little bits, but watching what's happening in the United States, there's a full-blown cold civil war underway here, and with competing interests. It's not clear what the outcome will be. And I don't think all the international elites exactly agree either. So, you know, we're in a time where it's chaos. And so I think there are plans within plans within plans, but it'd be hard to say what the outcomes will be. But all I'll say is that when I look at what those folks say they want to do, then things like what we're seeing right now around medical freedom, for instance, they make a lot of sense. I don't agree with it, but it makes a lot of sense why. Versus looking at it as just isolated incidents being like, this doesn't make sense. Why would they say this and then this? Like they contradict each other. It's like, it doesn't matter if it contradicts. Zoom out. Look where they want you, you know? So I don't know. I know I'm being very vague because this isn't the stuff I usually talk about. And I have executives to report to now.
But I understand what you said is brilliant because I trust that you speak from the heart. And
thank you.
And it's also not your responsibility to explain it to anybody.
Right. That's true. Or to even understand it myself, but.
Well, that's it. And I'll ask you a different question. The flip side, what's your agenda in as your role as Daniel Vitalis wearing this mask, that all the experience that you have accumulated over the last 4 or 5 decades? I'm not sure how old you are, but let's just say that. Or 42. your previous lifetimes. And right now, what is it that your intention with the skills that you have to express to the world, or just to express for yourself?
Well, I think it's important for me to say that I don't have children. So that puts me in a really different position than almost everybody that I know that's my age. So my priorities are really different because I don't have that responsibility, and I'm not all interwoven into the legacy project of children, which is probably the most important thing people do, but I didn't do that. And so, my goals are a couple things. Like for me, my legacy project is connecting as many people as I can to the natural world, because I think that, I see that like maybe like a evangelical Christian might think about somebody's relationship to Jesus, like how important they think that is, where they're willing to go to foreign lands and, you know, put themselves at great risk in order to share this message that they believe people need to hear for their own salvation, right? It's like, that's how I feel about people's connection to the natural world. What I see is happening is that people are being deceived and harvested off from the natural world to be put into a kind of electronic system where they could potentially forget the existence of the natural world altogether. Not tomorrow, but over the course of a couple of decades, it could literally become a place where you don't even know anymore what the natural world is. Like there could be people who never even experience it. The level of immersion that we are having into intelligent machines now, it's like, the trajectory is obvious. And so I think it's so critical that people know the source of life, and not just in a vague way. That's why I like to, you know, as I've matured and my work's matured, I've gone from teaching people about nature in a general sense to introducing people to individual species. Because I kind of realized, like, you know, it'd be one thing if I say, You should check out Australia. It's so cool. It's another thing to bring you there and introduce you to individuals there so that you have meaningful relationships. And then you feel like, oh, I can go here now because I have touch points. So if I take you out to harvest choke cherries or reishi mushrooms or a white-tailed deer or a mallard duck, now when you step into nature, you...
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.